Matthew 25, then, the parable of the talents. I got a friend who used to work as a careers advisor. So we used to joke, those who can get a career, get a career. And those who can't, become careers advisors. A bit like the old joke about teachers, isn't it? Those who can, do. And those who can't, teach. I don't know if you feel like you have a career. It's possible to have a job without having a career, isn't it? It's possible to, to be a, deliver a newspaper every day, be a newspaper boy. I used to deliver newspapers, but I certainly wouldn't have said as a 13-year-old boy that that was my career. It was just a job. We think of careers as being something where you hope to do this job for a long time to come. You build up knowledge and expertise. Maybe you've done some sort of training for it. It's the difference between a career and a job, isn't there? Whether you feel like your job, if you have one, is a career or not, every Christian has a career as a steward. That's what this parable is about. It's about being a steward, a lifelong calling in which we're trained, we develop, we grow in it. It's what the parable of talents is about. This parable, in some ways, has to be read in tandem with the parable of the 10 virgins. So the parable of the 10 virgins last week tells us that we need to prepare for the second coming. We need to be ready for it. Well, the parable of the talents tells us how we prepare and what we're meant to be doing while we're waiting for Jesus to come. That we're not meant to sit there like we do in the dentist's waiting room, just idly flicking through a magazine. You know, you're waiting for your appointment in that sense, but you're just sort of killing time almost. Well, this is the opposite here, that Jesus says we're to pursue a career of diligent stewardship. That's a career that won't end when our lives in this world end. Whether you do a job today, you're going to retire from it one day, aren't you? You're not going to be accountants. You're not going to be librarians one day. You're going to retire from your job, you hope, eventually. Christians never retire from being stewards. Actually, what this parable is going to show us is that we just get to graduate from our training school, which is life in this world, and we become stewards in the real, in the lasting world, in the new heavens and the new earth, in the world to come. Jesus is going to, in this parable, explain how at the moment there's a sense in which we're in charge of very little, but he will make us rulers over very much bigger things. That's where this parable is going. So let's think about the three main characters in this parable. That's going to be our structure for this morning, but the three main characters. Firstly, let's think about the master in this story, the man who travels to this faraway country. That's how Jesus starts it off. He starts off by talking about the kingdom of heaven in verse 14. We've seen that phrase so many times as we've gone through these parables, haven't we? The kingdom of heaven is like. And what's he saying it's like? What's he saying that God's rule is like? He's saying it's like a man who goes to a faraway country. Jesus is talking about himself here. He is days away from his own death. And then he's going to rise again. He's going to have 40 days with his disciples, teaching them, preparing them. And then he's going to ascend to heaven, and he's going to have gone away for a long time. That's the picture we're given, this man travelling to a faraway country. Jesus is saying to his disciples, this is what it's going to be like when I go. Okay, this is what you're to do. This is how you're to conduct yourselves. This is how you're to live while you're waiting for me to come back again. So the master in the story is Jesus. And he's pictured as being extremely wealthy. The amounts he gives to these talents, these amounts of money, 5 talents, 2 talents, and 1 talent. And 1 talent was about 20 years worth of wages. So to give one of them 5 talents... well, that's 100 years worth of normal wages. We're talking big sums of money that this master of the house owns. And then we're told immediately, verse 15, he goes on his journey. So then verses 16 and 17, we're told what they do with the money. The first to invest it, they trade the money, they make more, and they both double their capital. So one of them has 10 talents instead of 5, another one has 4 talents instead of 2, but the servant is given just 1 talent, well, he just goes and buries it. So he doesn't make any money at all. Now the word we're used for these people here, they're described as servants. But you know, the word servant doesn't really fully carry the meaning of what these three people are. When we think of servants, we think of, you know, TV programmes and books. You think of, I don't know, upstairs, downstairs, that sort of thing, where you've got these maids in the kitchen peeling potatoes and doing the washing and, you know, all these sorts of tasks that aren't very exciting or responsible, but they're just the servants of the house. Well, don't think of that sort of servant in this parable here. These are stewards. They're the masters of the house. They're the chief of staff. Joseph in the Old Testament is a great example of the sort of thing we mean. Joseph was set in charge. He was made master of Potiphar's house. They're very responsible positions these servants have. That's why they're entrusted with huge sums of money. You know, you don't get it in these sort of these TV programs I'm talking about, do you? They're just servants. They just wash the dishes and all that sort of thing. Here, they're responsible as stockbrokers. They're in charge of huge amounts of money because, as well as that, they would have managed the farm and the vineyard. They'd been in charge of the children's education, the running of the kitchen. If anyone important came to visit, they'd sort everything out for it. These are stewards with a lot of responsibility. Now, it's all in verse 19 that the master, after a long time, the Lord comes and settles accounts with them, the Lord of those servants. And he wants to know how they use the money that he's given to them. I hope you can even at this stage start to see the picture that is emerging for us. That Jesus has returned to heaven, but one day he will return back and ask us what we did with the things he has entrusted to us. Well, this master gives talents to these three servants. What are these talents? Now, this is one where our brains get confused here. There's something that's in some ways unfortunate. The English word talent, when I say you have a great talent for something, what I mean is you're really skillful at it. You're really gifted. You've got a talent for such and such. So we read this and we naturally read the word talent. We think, so Jesus is saying I need to use my talents for him. I need to use my guitar playing skills or my cricketing ability or my ability to play the piano or my ability to teach or my sense of humour. All my talents that God's given me, well, I need to use those things. But that's not the definition of talent in this parable. Put out the English definition of the word. Put that out of your mind for a moment. A talent here is simply a unit of money. We could replace the word talent here for pounds or dollars or something like that. The talent is simply something the master gives to the steward to look after. That's what a talent represents here. Now, that does include our natural skills, our abilities, our talents. It does include that. But it also includes our bodies, our physical strength, our exercise, our resting. It includes our possessions, our bank accounts, our homes, our pets, our clothes. It includes our minds, our knowledge, our learning, our wisdom, our memory, the way we think, what we choose to think about. It includes our relationships, our time, our opportunities, our privileges. Do you see, this is so much wider than just what I'm good at, what my talents are. This is anything that God gives to us. Jesus gives us things. Let's put it as simply as that. But they all still belong to him. He gives us things on loan. It's Psalm 24 that says, "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it." Do you believe that's true? There's a sense in which whatever I have in my life today, well, it's still actually his. It's just on loan to me. Notice as well about this master that he gives different amounts of money to each servant, but none of them are being treated unfairly because all of them are being given enormous privileges. You know, even with one of them, to have that one talent, I mean, that's like being entrusted with, you know, £500,000 to go off and invest. This is a big responsibility he's been given. That's what Jesus does with us too. He gives us different amounts of money, time, health, different family situations, different relationships, different friendships, different, but all blessed, all tremendously privileged by what the Lord Jesus gives to us. And notice this as well with the master, before we move on to think about the servants. Notice what the master is interested in when he returns. If you look at verses 20 to 23, that section there, where these first two servants bring the money they've made back to the master, what does he say? Well, he doesn't say, oh great, now I can buy that yacht I've always wanted to buy. He doesn't say, great, now I've got past Bill Gates in the rich list, thank you very much. In other words, he doesn't see this in terms of what he gets out of this. What he's interested in is what he's learned about the servants. He's interested in the people, his own servants. And he's full of joy because he says, well done, good and faithful servant. He's thrilled that he's found faithful servants. And he says, well done here. That could be translated wonderful. I think we're sort of meant to imagine that he's sort of clapping his hands together. Wonderful. I'm so pleased. He's just thrilled. And he's thrilled that he gets to reward this servant for the way he's worked. I think even here you get to see just a little glimpse into the heart of God. That God derives great joy from seeing his servants, his stewards, serving him faithfully. And that he's not a slave driver. Actually, what gives him great joy is just to see them serving him well. What he wants is to find servants he can trust. Well, that's the master. We've learned a little bit about the master and who he represents. The master is Jesus in this parable. Let's think about the other types of servants. Firstly, we'll go in reverse order. We'll think about the wicked servant first, even though he comes last in the parable. Look at the man in verse 24. When he receives one talent and he says, what does he say? He says, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. What does the wicked servant think of his master? He thinks he's cruel and hard and unfair. Because the master doesn't have to do all the sowing. He doesn't have to do all the hard work of ploughing the field and all that other stuff. But he just turns up and expects to do the reaping. That's the picture this servant gives of the master. He says, this master, he just wants to gather where he hasn't done the work of scattering the seeds. So he doesn't see this master as kind or generous or fair, but as a hard slave driver just trying to squeeze as much as he can out of this poor servant as possible. So he says in verse 25 that he's afraid. So he just hid the money. And now he's just giving it back. I'm just giving back to you what I owe you. You gave me one talent, so I'm giving it back to you. But was he really afraid? You look at the response in verse 26 of the master, and I think this master can see straight through. Because if he was just afraid, I think the master would reassure him. Say, don't worry, it's okay, try again. Actually, what the master says is he's wicked and lazy. Look, there was an extremely low-risk option available. You could have just put the money in the bank and earned a bit of interest. There was something easy you could have done. But you don't try and tell me you were too afraid, too scared. You could have done that. So we're not meant to be sympathetic towards this steward. I don't know if you read this and maybe you felt that way. You read this and think, what's the problem? He's just giving back what he owed. They're all square, aren't they? But this is not some rabbit who's caught in the headlights, who just doesn't know what to do. We take our lead from the master. Remember, the master represents Jesus here, and he's saying, "Well, you think it's unfair because you don't get to keep the profit." Remember, that's the problem that the servant has here. The servant's problem is the master isn't fair. He just gets to keep all the good stuff. I do all the work, and he gets any profit that comes his way. And the master is coming and saying, "Well, you think that's unfair? But hang on, wait a minute. The money's mine. You know, who does the talent belong to? It's mine. I employed you. I took you on. I trained you. The steward would have been given somewhere to live. He would have been able to live there in the master's house. I gave you the opportunity to improve yourself. You're taking on more responsibility. I gave you this huge amount of money to look after on my behalf. I gave you so much, and yet you're still angry towards me. You're still bitter that these things ultimately belong to me and that they don't belong to you." Jesus is saying some people see him like that. The question they're asking is, why should I work for him? I want to benefit from any labour I do. I want to gain. So ask yourself a question this morning. How do you view serving Jesus? Is it just a slog you have to get through? A necessary evil? A tax you have to pay if you want to be a Christian? Well, I've got to put a few hours in. I've got to do some stuff for him. Is your attitude towards serving Jesus and using the things he's given you for him instead of for yourself, it reveals what you really think of him. What you really think of Jesus is revealed by your actions. What this servant is displaying, he's revealing his own heart by his words. That at the heart of it is he's self-centered, because he only wants to serve himself. If this won't benefit me, why should I do it? That's why he just gives the single talent back. What's the point of taking a risk, he thinks? Because I don't get to keep anything I've made. So if it doesn't benefit me, why should I do it? That's what sin is. This is one definition of sin we can give ourselves. Sin is seeing myself as the king in my own little kingdom, with me at the centre, and other people, even God, he's there to serve me. Can you see the problem with this? It's so delusional. It's so full of grandeur about myself, about me. And when I think that way, my own heart has deceived me. I think I can be in charge. I think it's unreasonable for Jesus to make demands of me. I think it's unfair that he gets to keep the fruits of any work I do. Because I'm the king. I'm at the centre. That's what sin is. And when we think that way, we're denying the most basic truths of this world. The earth is the Lord's. And everything in it. This is the world he made. And everything you possess, it's because he gives it to you. Maybe if you're being honest, there are things you're proud about in your life today. Proud because of your job, your career, and the things you've achieved. And you always get good reviews from your boss, and you always get a great bonus. You're doing really well. You're doing well in your job. Proud because people seem to like you. You're popular. You can always make people laugh. Proud because of your sporting achievements. Proud because, you know, I'm not going to say this to anyone, but actually, yeah, I'm quite attractive. People seem to like me. Proud because people always seem to come to you for advice. You always seem to have something intelligent or wise. You always have the right answers. If you're proud of anything you have in your life, well, it's a misguided pride, because God gave those things to you. You didn't create it yourself. They come from the Lord Jesus. So when Jesus comes to demand the fruits of those things, he's being more than fair. He didn't have to give those things to us in the first place. Imagine going to a cash point. You go to a cash point tomorrow, you withdraw some of your money. This is your account. You put your card in, you type your PIN in, and the bank flashes up with a message. How dare you withdraw this money? This is Barclays money. This belongs to HSBC. You're not having your money back. Well, the bank's forgotten something, hasn't it? It's my money. I just deposited with them for a while. But now I'm coming to have it back, and it's my money, and I can take it back whenever I want. They can't keep my money from me. But when we push Jesus away, that we're behaving like the bank would be there, conveniently forgetting that everything we have comes from him. Jesus gives this warning in verse 29. He says, take that talent away from him, give it to the one who has 10 talents. And he says this, for to everyone who has, more will be given and he will have an abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. I don't know if you read that and you think, well, what does that mean? Him who doesn't have, even what he has will be taken. That doesn't make sense, does it? Someone who doesn't have, well, what he has, well, he doesn't have anything, does he? How can what he doesn't have be taken away from him if he doesn't have anything? You know, but you see what he's saying. He's emphasizing that same point again. That one talent, whose was it? It wasn't actually the servant's, was it? So that one talent, the servant who thought in some way that it was his, well, now it's being taken away from him. What he didn't even have in the first place, what didn't actually belong to him, is now being removed. And Jesus is saying that same thing will be true for us if we reject him. That the things we have now in this world, our health, our jobs, our money, our family, our friends, our plans for the future, our holidays, our sense of humour, everything we have is taken away from us if we reject Jesus. If you want to think about what hell is like, I think this is one of the most vivid pictures we're given. Goes on to talk about what it's like in verse 30. He describes it as a place of outer darkness, because even the light of the sun is removed there. He describes it as a place of weeping, because laughter and happiness is removed. He describes it as a place of gnashing of teeth, because relief from pain is removed. Having functioning bodies that don't feel that work, even if your body doesn't work perfectly well, there will be constant pain there. Nothing's going to work well in hell. Is when you read this and you think about what he's saying, every good gift from God removed. What an awful warning he's given us. Don't go down that route. If you're not a Christian, if you're not putting your trust in Jesus Christ, that's what he warns you of. Thirdly, there are good servants in this story. So we thought about the master, it's Jesus. We thought about this wicked servant, someone who wants to be his own boss. And thirdly, we're thinking about the good servants now. Now, as you read this story, you can detect, I think, the excitement in the voices of these two servants. So in verse 20, and then again in verse 22, it's the same thing. They come to him and say, Lord, you gave me 5 talents. Look, I've got 5 more for you. Look what I've done. There's like a childlike enthusiasm. You know, when children have, you know, they'll probably come out of Sunday school at the end of the service and they'll bring in something they've made and they'll want to show some of us grown up, look what I made. Look, isn't it exciting? And we're happy for them, aren't we? That sort of excitement. Look, Mum, look what I made for you. See, they've not just done the bare minimum, have they? They've not just done the easy thing of putting it in the bank and earns a bit of interest. And they've not worked out of fear or compulsion. They've worked for joy. They've worked because they love the master and they want to see the smile on his face when he comes back. They've worked because they want to build that master's empire. That's what's motivating him. Do you remember what we said the master is looking for? That he's looking for servants he can trust. And he's testing them here with small things. Relatively small. I know it's a large amount of money. But he says they're small things. And in verse 23, that's how he says. He says, you've been faithful over a few things. I will make you rulers over many things. God is looking for stewards who share his aims, his ambitions, instead of serving themselves. People who do it because they get to serve Jesus, not because they have to do it. People who do it because they want to see Jesus' name honoured and Jesus' kingdom built. People who take joy in seeing sinners hearing the gospel and coming to Christ. Our stewardship in this world is a test of that. He's given us a few things. That's how he says it. Maybe you feel like you've got very few things. Well, that's how Jesus says it. He says all of us have just been given a few things. But it's a test. Jesus is saying, what will you do with those few things I'm giving you? What will you do with your leisure time? Maybe you don't have much time that you would describe as leisure time, but maybe you have a little bit. Your money. Maybe you don't have much money, but he's given you a few things. What will you do with your career and your family and your skills? And the question is, whose are they? Who owns them? Who should receive the fruits from those things? Should you receive them? Or should God receive them? Stewardship is finding joy in managing the things God gives us for his glory, willingly, without resentment, without a sense of thinking, but I should get to keep the profit here. Stewardship is saying, well, look, whatever I have is given by God. It's on loan from him to me. So as long as I have them, and I don't know how long I will have them for, I will use them for him. This is something that transforms our attitude to our homes, our bank balances, our skills, our time. Stewardship transforms our way of thinking about life. You see it in this way as well. Do you notice what the reward is? They don't get to keep the money they've earned. They don't get a 10% slice of the profits. That's what you'd normally do, isn't it? If you were going to, you know, it works this way in real investment, isn't it? You give your money to someone who's going to invest it for you, to a big company. They'll charge you for it. They'll do it. You'll get a profit, but you'll pay them a fee in some way as well. Here, they don't get a slice of the profits. They get more of the same. That's what that saying in verse 23 is. They had a few things. Now they become ruler over many things. The same types of things, just more of them. Think about the wide range of tasks those stewards had. You know, welcoming important visitors, being responsible for the vineyard, growing the crops, making sure that the chef's there and he cooks that big fancy banquet. You know, running the show. What Jesus is talking about here is us being rulers over many things. That along with Jesus in heaven, we will be running the show. We will be in charge. He's talking about our comprehensive rule over the whole globe. A place where the creative juices just keep on flowing. A place where we'll be taking on different projects, things that excite us, things that where we can just make things even more beautiful, even more thrilling. You know, in this world, the opportunities we have to serve Christ are small, aren't they? I think that's fair to say. Yes, there are differences between us in this room, but they're all relatively small. You know, none of us have enormous things we get to do in one sense, do we? None of us get to preach to hundreds of thousands of people. None of us have billions and billions of pounds. Please tell me if I'm wrong here. I don't think there are any Bill Gateses in the room this morning. We have small things. But the picture we have of heaven is of us building and designing, creating, growing, developing, stewarding the whole world, being rulers over many things. Just think about all the exciting possibilities that will mean. Who's going to be in charge of dog breeding in heaven? I don't know if that interests you. Maybe it doesn't. Wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be exciting? Maybe you think, oh, no, never going to have time for that. Creating a new type of dog. Well, I'll breed these ones together. Let's see what happens. One that's even cuter than all the others. And then bringing it to the Lord. Saying, look what I made for you, Lord. And he'll say, wonderful. Spending time making a beautiful water garden. Ever had time for that? Making huge waterfalls and lakes and ponds full of life, flowers with incredible colours. Imagine the space there's going to be to do that. Maybe you'd love to do that and you think, oh, just am I ever going to have time to do that in this world? Probably not. Well, we're going to be rulers over many things one day. And we'll be able to bring the Lord along and say, look, look what I've made for you, Lord. Come and enjoy it. I did it for you, Lord. And he'll say, wonderful, well done. It's the promise we have. The master says to these two servants, enter into the joy of your Lord. Well, there's a different translation that says, come and share your master's happiness. The things he enjoys, the things that make him happy, will make us happy too. We will share his happiness. Shall we just get tiny glimpses of that in this world? We have these little things he gives us, and it does make us happy, and it makes him happy, and we share his joy when we work with him. But how much more we've got to look forward to. If you're a Christian, that's your career. It's where your career is headed. Little things now, the Lord's going to say, well done, good and faithful servant. I'm going to put you in charge of loads of things. Don't feel daunted by that. You know, that maybe you think, oh, I wouldn't want to be in charge of lots of stuff. I wouldn't want to feel the pressure. It's not going to be that like that in heaven. The Lord is saying, here's your training period. And there's so much more to come. So let's wrap this up. The question Jesus is asking us to think about here is this. How do you view the things you have? Whose benefit are they for? Are they for your benefit or for Jesus's? Because our answer to that question reveals who we're living for. This is a parable, you know, where for those of us who are Christians, it's then a calling for us to stop and take stock. If the master returned today, and remember that parable of the 10 virgins has just happened, we're being told, prepare now because he's coming. He returned today and he did an audit of the things he's loaned you. What would he say about how you've used them? What would he say about the money he's lent you and the way you use it? Whose benefit do you use it for? What would he say about the mind, the brain he's given to you? What do you study? What do you learn about? What do you feed into your mind? What's your area of expertise? Whose benefit are you using your mind for? Your own or for his? What about the way you use your time? What would he say about your time? Would he find someone who thinks, what can I do for my Lord this week? Or would he find someone who thinks, what's the bare minimum I can get away with? What can I get away with so I can still be a... What's the smallest amount? The master's looking for servants who are faithful. The master's coming back. That's the picture we're given, isn't it? He comes back to settle accounts. So he says, live for that day now. The day when the accounts are settled. Live for that day so that if he came right now, you'd be able to excitedly say, I'm so glad you came. Look what I did. It wasn't much. I know I only had a little bit, but and I know I failed in all sorts of ways, but look what I tried to do for you, Master. Live now to hear those words. Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. What an exciting thing to hear. I hope you're excited to hear those words one day. Those are the words the Lord Jesus will say to his people. We're going to sing a hymn to finish. It's number 757. Jesus, I have promised to serve thee to the end. It's a calling for us to recommit ourselves in service to him. We'll stand and sing 757.